patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
All right. Scott is away again. He's off in Africa. He sent us a text message this morning, Joel, of zebras.
Yeah.
He is in real Africa right now.
Real Africa.
So you and me filling in the meantime, thank you so much. Joel, you might know him from TikTok. Hey, Commie, very substantial content he puts out over there on the baseball side, covers movies as well. We're going to talk a lot of things today. Let's do the rundown quick. MLB corruption. We're going to talk sticky stuff. We're going to talk baseball scandals, Goldilocks balls. We're going to get into why Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro suck. And I know you're excited to talk about this. I know our comment section is very eager to hear someone on the other side of this, because Scott and I like to toe the company line, as we always get accused of. We had Craig Ballard on Monday. He's a believer in what Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro were doing. So it will be good to hear your side of things. We're going to talk Angels ownership update, as Artie Moreno has taken them off the market. He's not selling the Angels and the fallout that means for Shohei Ohtani. We're going to talk Xander Bogaerts and his 4D chess move heading into free agency this past season, how that all played out. Joel, I know you got some interesting insight there. We're going to talk a really cool piece of tech that Formula One, yes, racing, race cars are implementing heading into the 2023 F1 series or season. I think this would work well for baseball. We'll get into this towards the end. And then, of course, you, for anybody who doesn't know, screenwriter, you write movies, big Hollywood, big time writer.
Big
you've
time.
Got. You've got a Tommy John of the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, there's the autograph. I don't know if that lights up very well, but there's my Tommy John.
Very cool. So you've got a Tommy John movie in the works, signed off by Tommy John. Uh-huh. We're going to talk that towards the end here. Okay, that's the rundown. Let's get to it. Joel, I know you better as Hey Commie. Let's start with this. Let's start with your rise. I don't want to say your rise to fame. Your rise to notoriety. Can we say that?
Infamy in some places.
Infamy. Yes. The target of Yankees fandom anger.
Oh yeah.
Death threats. Yeah. Is death threats a real thing?
Oh yeah. Michael K said he'd run me over with the team bus on the air. So I've had it. I've had it publicly. I've had the little, anonymous username messages with the squirt gun saying, I see you in the street. And it's always funny because now they put, it's not a black gun. It's a green, like
right, the laser gun. Beam.
Yeah. So those, that's what you get on death threats for TikTok, is a bunch of like green laser beam.
It's cute, but just as menacing in its own way.
you look outside, but you've got a smile on you. You're like, oh, it's kind of funny that it's a green.
Okay. Squirt. So for people who don't know, for people who aren't familiar with what you did on TikTok, for people who maybe are new to the channel, by the way, thank you. We're at like 50% growth over the last 2 months, which is awesome. We're pushing, I think, close to, I think we just hit 6,000 subscribers across our two channels here earlier this week, which is awesome.
Number,
so if you haven't yet,
Blue Jays podcast in Canada, people. And I'm not just bad. I'm just so happy to be a part of this, man, to watch you guys explode and take over this little, like, not little, this is a country's obsession with the baseball team, right?
All right. Enough tooting my horn. Let's get into Joel. Let's get into Hey Commie. Let's get into, what did you cover over the course of, what was it, 2021?
Yeah.
Yeah. The sticky stuff. All right, let's just go right back to the start. how did this come to be? What did you see happening? And what were you doing to save the game you love?
Started, I'm going to say, about April 14th, 2021. It was a Yankees Blue Jays series. So it was between then, I think, and the 16th of April. And Cole was pitching, right? So that's Garrett Cole's on the mound. Yankees ace, 327 strikeout guy with Houston, triple crown. Him and DeGrom are the best pitchers in this. And every foul ball, every ball that goes into the dirt, every ball that gets alternated out of the game, I notice he's going into his glove. And he's going into his glove for something sticky. And it's really obvious. Like, he's got his glove. Do I have a baseball glove around me? I don't. Yes, I do. There's one more.
For those of you listening on iTunes or Spotify, Joel has grabbed a nice baseball glove.
So Garrett Cole would have his sticky stuff here. He would have his sticky stuff here inside the glove. And just casually, he'd get the ball back. He'd go in and grab a little bit of... Now, this was called Spider Tap. This was a substance used by world-class strongmen, usually for something called like Atlas stones, which is a massive 300
round holder stone balls.
You're lifting up onto a pedestal. So they'll coat their forearms and their chests with this spider tack, so the 350 pound boulder doesn't crush their feet, right? Like, that's understandable. That's understandable. In baseball, what it does when you apply a foreign substance to a ball is a spin rate multiplier. Okay, you're talking about going, Garrett Cole was, now velocity and control are very important, but we know now in baseball in 2023 that spin rate is maybe the most, if you want whiffs, if you want swing and miss, you're looking for spin rate. You can get swing and miss on 93 miles an hour, but if your spin rate's up in the 2500s, you're getting the same spin rate as a 99 mile. So Garrett Cole had the combination of
Let me jump in here. Spin rate, having a higher spin rate, how does that affect the trajectory of the pitch to make it harder to hit? Why is 93 with a 3000 RPM spin rate harder to hit than a 99 with a 2100 spin rate?
It's the ball's ability to either defy gravity or to, in the case of a breaking ball, a slider, a curveball, break more. So a fastball, the goal of a four-seam fastball is for it to maintain its trajectory. Okay, the classic term in baseball is the ball's got run or ride. These are the old school terms to define a fastball that would stay true, and it wouldn't have a considerable drop because of that spin rate. That spin rate will maintain the angle in the air because of the backspin. So Garrett Cole, when he's normal, has about a 12-inch drop on his fastball. Okay. When he's cheating, he has a 7-inch drop. So it's very easy to notice that when you're seeing that 7 on the vertical drop, Garrett Cole's probably cheating. It's just that simple. That 5 inches is the difference between a barrel and going over the bat.
Right. Missing entirely. When you're talking about a bat, that's what, 2¾ inches?
Exactly. And that's just a fastball. When you're talking about the curveball break, the slider break, you're talking about 6 inches, you're talking about 8 inches, 10, you're talking about massive break on all the curveballs, every breaking pitch that you can use, right? So it's, and then weirdly enough, nowadays, we saw the enforcement come along, but now we're in a state where you can use it situationally. This is a situation where you can use it at the beginning of an inning. Use it 2 or 3 pitches. But to get back to the big exposure of what happened on my channel was I saw Cole pitching against the Jays, and I saw our boys in 2021. That was the big year for Vladdy, his big blow up year, our big transition into being a playoff contender. And I saw Cole cheating back to back games against us. And I'm like, well, this is going to be 9 years. It's going to be 10 years of him. This is 45 starts where this guy's ERA against us is going to be 220 instead of 380. So I go and I just start attacking it. I didn't think it was going to lead to anything. I thought people were going to laugh at me. That first video I did got I think $1.7 million. And then I was like, well, maybe I should do this. Maybe like, I can't just, if I'm going to do it, I can't just attack Gerrit Cole. I have to look at the entire league and I have to expose it, because my point of view was it makes the game boring.
Of course. Strikeout rates are up. Who wants to watch that?
Nobody. If you're talking about increased, nobody wants to watch guys come up to the plate, a bunch of balls hit a glove, they turn around, walk back. The higher the strikeout rate, the more boring the game is, the slower the game is, because balls aren't being hit for one pitch outs. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to get deep into these. You have to see 12, 13 K per nine because guys can't hit it. And it was also leading to the more movement means more hit by pitch.
Of course, no matter what happened, rate rise.
Exactly. So you had seen a substantial increase in hit by pitch over the last 15 years, to the point where more batters are hit now unintentionally than they were in the 70s when they were being hit intentionally. Okay. And it's drastically more. That always shocked me when I was like, oh my God, that's terrible. You're intent by accident, you're doing what these guys, double what these guys did with intention. And so that scared me. Also, the jack up in velocity, seeing 92 be the average fastball. Now it's closer to 95. The ball that hit Bryce Harper in the face in 2021, that was his MVP season. And he came back from a headshot that was, what, Tony Conigliaro bad from Boston? Like, we were, you know, Kirby Puckett went down from an injury like that to the eye, right? So you're playing with these guys. You're playing with their careers when you're getting headshots. So
the good news was you didn't find any Blue Jays pitchers cheating, right?
One. I found Travis Burton. Do you remember him?
Vaguely,
exactly. So Travis Bergen was came up at the beginning of 2020.
You look, though. You're looking. This was a, like you said, after you moved on from Gerrit Cole, you did take
I couldn't do it in
you
the sense
everywhere,
of
right?
A homer. Like, I couldn't do it. Like, I saw Gerrit Cole, but it's like, if I just expose Gerrit Cole over and over and over again, it's obviously a Blue Jays fan looking at a rivalry issue that one. As soon as I looked at it from a team stamp, like I said, like about the fifth person I exposed was a Blue Jay, because I watched the Blue Jays a lot. So that goes to show that the Blue Jays, for the most part, were an incredibly clean team. Right.
For Chatwood.
Sure. He needed it. He should have used it a little bit more. I'm surprised he did. But it being a Blue Jays fan, you don't see it unless it's being done against you. Mm-hmm. Which was the case, which was most of the case. 60% of the league saw a 10% decrease in spin rate. So 60% of the league was using something more than what they should have been using. Okay. 30% of the league saw a 20% decrease. 10% of the league saw a 30% decrease. And when you look at a guy, weirdly enough, Shane Bieber put up a good season last year. His K rate dropped from, I believe, 13.5 per nine to 8. That's five strikeouts a game that were just disappeared.
So this is after the MLB mid-season implemented pretty drastic restrictions on this foreign substance.
Yeah, so 11 weeks I did straight foreign substance videos. That's all I did. John Means' no-hitter was a big one. I think that did 3.5 million views because he threw a no-hitter on foreign substance. And where's John Means now, right? Like, he's got Tommy John, but he's not been the same guy since that foreign substance went away.
Well, it's funny too. Like, Josh Donaldson, obviously former Jay, came out pretty strongly and said, look, I have a whole catalog. I have a whole library of evidence of guys cheating. And that was almost certainly just your TikTok page he was referring to.
Yeah. He said a few things that it was literally at the time that I had a video on TikTok called Baseball Cheating Catalog. So he used the term catalog and I was like, that's my term. And then I went and I put up, literally the day that he said that, I put up Josh Donaldson's pitching cheating catalog. And I just put up a compilation of all the ones that I had done. And then that ripped, I think, 2.5 million. So baseball, MLB was getting, I want to say, 1,000 hashtags a day off TikTok from people saying, why aren't you dealing with this off my videos? Like, they were getting bombarded with MLB, you got to stop this. What's going on? How come this guy's finding this stuff out and you're not?
You put the spotlight on it. The cockroaches had no choice but to scatter. And
wildly enough, like when they did something, and it was a fluke, because in the pre-existing collective bargaining agreement, the players had already signed to this agreement to not cheat, to not use a foreign substance. It's in the rule books. So all they did was enforce the rule, which they could do. And all of a sudden, it should have been every other year, that'd be a collective bargaining issue. And you'd have to pass that through and get that approved.
Right, right. We're not passing a new rule. We're just enforcing a rule that has existed, that we've agreed to, that we haven't been enforcing. And now we're going to enforce it.
Yeah.
So we do have to move on here. I do want to talk the Goldilocks balls. And your thoughts on that. Let's spend a few minutes on that. But if you're enjoying this talk on the sticky stuff and the breakdown there, let me know in the comments. We'll have Joel back on. We could talk this at depth another time, but we do have so much other things to get to. I don't want to spend the full 60 minutes just talking sticky stuff. And I know we could. So if you're enjoying that talk and the explanation and the breakdown, let me know and we'll definitely revisit it. But for now, let's pivot. Goldilocks balls. What the heck is a Goldilocks ball? For anybody that doesn't know, why is it a big deal?
Okay, so Goldilocks balls, this all comes from 2018 when MLB purchased Rawlings. They purchased their means of production. They own their baseballs. So all before that, they were getting their baseballs from, they were purchasing them from a company like Spalding or Rawlings. They would purchase them, and they had no ownership of that company. They bought the owners. They spent $380 million, 2018, bought Rawlings. So now they control the means of production. Sure enough, the next season, 2019, the juice ball year, 6,700 home runs are hit, 16% more than any season on record, 60% more than any steroid year. The first year that they were in control of the ball, you started seeing 89 mile an hour opposite field home runs. You started, the game changed overnight. And they were like, ooh, well, we, you know, that was a little drastic. COVID comes along in 2020. So granted, we'll allow some issues to happen with ball production because there was a world pandemic. I understand that. In 2021, there were then two balls used. There were two different kinds of balls. There was a dead ball and a juice ball. And that led to people conceiving, well, is it possible that baseball can literally control where these balls are going? Is this something where they're controlling the individual game? It was brought up when they were talking about the Field of Dreams game, of them using those specific balls to grab the attention because balls were just flying during that game. And other specific games during the year, were these balls being used for nationally televised games? What was the case, right? So the balls were scientifically opened up by a physicist who chopped them open at the end of 2021, realized there were two balls, and MLB was forced to say, we had to dip into our previous batch because of COVID. So everybody sat back and were like, all right, okay, you can't keep pulling the COVID thing, but we'll allow it for 2021.
You get one mulligan.
Yeah, you get one mulligan, but you can't keep using that mulligan over and over and over again. But the fear being, what happens the next season? Does it get worse, or do we just get one ball? The 2022 season comes along, we get three balls. We get a dead ball, we get a juice ball, and we get that bowl of porridge that's just right, the Goldilocks ball. And the strange thing is the usage of that ball. Where the ball was found. That ball was found specifically at the All-Star game. That ball was found in the postseason. And that ball was found in Yankees games. Okay. And that is terrifying. Now, this is a small sample size. This is about 200 balls. Okay. So 200 balls out of a selection of 100,000 could lead you to any conclusion. Sure. But the fact that it led to the conclusion that the biggest money franchise in baseball was getting a specific kind of ball. And you can even remember as a Blue Jays fan, Gausman, when he was pitching against the Yankees.
And tossing them back five in a row.
right? He knew.
Manoah had some comments about the balls. Yeah.
Like it is to a, and we were doing, remember this gesture we were doing halfway through the season of the managers, you see the managers on the dug and they grab balls. They'd have two different balls in their hands, which is funny to say, but they, and they'd be juggling them like this. And you could tell that the management was like, they could tell the physical difference just by grabbing them, just by, I hate doing that gesture. I got to stop doing that gesture, but you could see it in season that the players were like, these balls, they got something needs to be done with these balls. And then at the end of the year, sure enough, all of their, you know, fears are turned out to be true. And now that potentially tarnishes Judge's home run chase. That was, you know, people are like, that's not real now. And it's like the stuff that did to the game, and especially in this era of gambling. This era of gambling where gambling has taken over, and you're telling me that there might be somebody out there who knows where the balls are going. This is, two number fives are on the mound. These are the two number one offenses in the baseball. Let's send the juice balls there and bet on the over. Right? Like it's
so, really. Okay. With that in mind, Joel, I just want to, because I've taken the approach for most of this time I've digested this story and considered the fact that if there was a conspiracy, there should be not Goldilocks balls at Yankee games. There should be juice balls at Yankees games, right? Because we're trying to inflate Aaron Judge's home run record. That's not the case. But if we're looking at it from a point of view of the on-field product, just the entertainment value, right? Like you said, if the ball is too juiced and they're just flying out of the park, that's not fun to watch either.
No.
Right? So there is something to be said there that, okay, well, maybe there is value in just having the proper amount of bounce and prioritizing Yankees games and showcase games like the Field of Dreams, like the All-Star game. So I follow you there. As far as the gambling and the manipulation that way, whether or not it was manipulated and whether or not someone was privy to that information and had inside gambling, you know, take the over because we're having juiced balls, take the under because it's their dead balls. Whether or not that was happening, I want to just, for me, I table that. The fact that it's even possible is enough of a red flag for me to be like, this is dog crap. This cannot happen, right? Like, we can't exist in a world where this is the thing, right? Like, did you ever watch the, there was a fun documentary on HBO called, McMillions, I think. And it was about how the mob had taken over the monopoly, the $1 million monopoly prizes through, like, you know, McDonald's monopoly.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And there was a run of like 14 years of these monopoly $1 million prizes that were all illegitimately like given out to like family members and whatever the case may be. Anyways, watch it if you haven't seen it, but point being is, like, if it's possible to be manipulated, there's going to be people manipulating. And whether that's at the largest scale of the world, or even if it's just a small-time guy who's taken advantage of an opportunity, we can't have that. So what do we need to see in 2023? Just Goldilocks balls, right? There's no more excuse. We've got the good ball.
There was no excuse for this season. And my...
Right,
my,
but now now they're caught with their hand in the cookie jar.
I swear they were last year, but that didn't stop them. The other little tweak that I was going to add to the Yankees aspect of things, right? If you're the Yankees, right? I understand the juice ball and wanting the juice ball. Okay. But say you're Aaron Boone. Okay. Say you're Aaron Boone. I'm not saying Aaron Boone is the conspiracy master of this, but you come up to him and you say, hey, we can affect the balls that you get. You got this one, you got A, B, and C. You know, A is a little hot, B is a little cold, C's right in there. And what, as a manager, would you want? You would say, what balls are you going to use in the playoffs? And they go, oh, these balls. Well, I want the balls that don't give my hitters an advantage and don't give my pitchers an advantage. I want the ball that's right in the middle so that my team isn't battling internally, that my pitchers aren't hating my hitters aren't hating my pitchers. Everybody's getting the advantage that they need. And if that Goldilocks the juice ball, then Aaron Judge will be. And
Yeah, I follow your logic there. I also follow the logic of when it comes to playoffs, we want to just be comfortable with whatever the ball we're going to be using in playoffs is, right? It's the same idea of, you know, if you're going to play a game in Denver and you get there early so you can adjust to the high altitude, you know, like not so much a factor in baseball because of the schedule, right? But like football teams, you know, they do their high altitude training because it is different when you're just running and you're competing in that slightly thinner oxygen or whatever the case may be, right? Whatever the theory is behind that. So I do buy into that, that like just getting acclimatized to what you're going to be experiencing when it matters most, I could see why that would be an advantage, right?
It's just like you said, if there's a possibility of corruption, there's probably an 80%, 90% chance it's happening. And to take it even back to the 80s, the big conspiracy in the 80s was the free agency conspiracy from the owners, where they literally for I believe 4 years, cut out the concept of free agency. They did not pay for free agents over a 4 year span to try to kill the concept of free agency. And that was a league-wide collusive effort. So they've got it in their history within our lifetime of doing this. So, and the money has only from the value of a team in the 80s, 100 million to being 10 billion, right? $7 billion franchises.
Ooh. Well, I'll tell you what, too, from a gambling standpoint, I'm not saying I'm a criminal, but if I was a criminal and I was into this sort of thing, maybe it did even occur to me that ball allocation was something that could be manipulated or tracked or discussed. All of a sudden, after seeing this article and seeing this kind of news story, maybe I do go and I go, hey, I wonder if we could get in on that. You know, like maybe there's some criminals who weren't taking advantage of it last year, who now that they realize, oh, this is a thing, I just got to find out the guy in charge of this, make a phone call, you know, either a threatening phone call or a generous tip-off type phone call and be like, hey, you give me the hot inside scoop on where the juice balls are going so I can start betting the over on those games or, you know, whatever the case may be, right? It's not good. Not good for baseball. They need to get their stuff together. We got to move on, though. We're approaching the halfway mark of this episode already. We're still on topic number one. So
I'm sorry.
That's right. This is good. This is a good talk. We might just go past the hour mark. Let's pivot though. Tell me why you're not a fan of Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro.
So that's like a book at this point.
This is good because we got a whole comment section who's been crapping on Scott and I for toting the company line and saying, you guys, are you afraid of the ramifications? And I say, no, we have Joel on all the time. You're on every long toss we do every Sunday, and you are not afraid. You have and your you opinion. We have
never
ours.
Never silenced me. This is a place where you can have your baseball opinion no matter what.
Let's air your frustrations right now, Joel.
Let's dive into, I think that when you look, let's just look at how they spend money. Okay. They're terrible at it. Atrocious. They're probably just through that. They should have been fired. Okay. So Hyunjin Ryu, who I, in 2021, I wanted to be a fan of him. I made videos. I'm like, this guy is good, you know, but what are we looking at? We're looking at a 32-year-old injury prone pitcher. Okay. Old, no velocity, injury prone. Okay. Chalk that up. George Springer, old, injury prone, inconsistent. 32-year-old center fielder could be as a 50-year-old center fielder. You don't play 32-year-old center field. I've seen center field. I know the history of the game. Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays, Ken Griffey Jr., these guys horribly, the degradation that they experience at 30 because of the physical toll their body goes through from 20 to 30, 30 to 40 is not the same. And if you put $150 million on that and expect that to play 150 games, you're ridiculous. And
you, sure enough,
Sorry, just while we're on the George Springer, obviously the Aaron Judge free agency, that whole contract was a big talking point. And I know we discussed a lot about he is a big boy,
huge.
Aaron Judge, right?
Huge.
And you brought up, I don't know if you have them ready, this was a couple months ago, but you brought up the number of center field, like the performance of center fielders who are 6'3" or taller. And how they, let's just say, don't age gracefully necessarily in a statistics standpoint. Uh-oh. Well, guess how tall George Springer is? He's 6'3".
Uh-huh. Big boy. Big boy, big swing. A very aggressive swing. Another thing. That the mechanism that his swing is not Teoscar Hernandez's swing.
Mm-hmm.
That's violent. That's smooth mechanics that creates 115 mile an hour exit velocity. George Springer is grip and rip, coming out of his heels, falling down on the ground. When
he's is much more Bo Bichette than a Teoscar, for sure.
Yes, his power comes from creating it every single where he can, place he can, and putting everything he can in every swing. Springer, at the same time, though, injury prone in his 20s. We're talking about a guy who's played 65% of games for Blue Jays. You look at his numbers, that's one thing to look at a player. But you have to look at him, 100 games, right? 100 games, he's going to play 65 of them. Then his backup plays 35. So he's not as good as he looks because 35% of the time, he is a backup. And now our backup isn't Randall Grichuk. We don't even know who our backup is. Our fourth outfielder is such a step down right now when we were in a position 2 years ago where, you know, Grichuk's not the greatest ball player, but hell, he could come in, hit a bomb, make a catch, run the bases, right? That's a fourth outfielder. That's a fourth outfielder that slots in the number five, number six spot in the lineup sometimes, right? That's a, then to turn that into Tapia, which is a serious step down. And then to take a step down again to literally nothing at this point, which we don't know, like I'm fingers
Tapia,
crossed pro far.
Tapia may have felt like a step down from Grichuk, but I do have to say he over delivered. Like,
sure, like he hit 260, 270, right? Like, there was some spurts in June where he was hitting the ball pretty well, right? There was a span of 40 games where I think he bat 350.
Yeah, the second half of the season, I think Tapia was pretty good, got off to a bit of a slow start. But Tapia, I think we all have to say, for what we expected from him, we were pleasantly surprised, were we not?
Yeah, but wouldn't you have taken 19 home runs from your fourth outfielder? Right? Wouldn't you
have taken that? I can't argue there. Sure.
I'd have taken 19 bombs from my fourth outfielder. Like, okay, that's not too bad. Especially considering Springer is going to be gone. That's probably a little bit more. I don't know. But, okay, so the point here is transactions that were, okay? So okay. Now we look at the 2021 team, okay? The 2021 team being the team that is everything that, at least from my couch GM position, I'm like, that's the team that you build on. This is the team that you build on. This solidified this lineup that put up 870 runs, 660 runs against, 200 run differential, expectations of 100 wins. Okay. Now I said it's a 91 win team, but with everything that you build a team now is based on runs scored, runs allowed. When you put up 200 more runs than you allow, that's a first place team. That is a first place team. And at that point, we were the second youngest team in baseball with $100 million of spending room towards the cap. So what do? We lose Ray. We lose Simeon. We bring in Gausman, Kikuchi, Berríos. That is $60 million that brought us zero wins. Zero. Zero. $60 million. You spent $60 million on zero wins. Gausman got three. Ryu, Berríos, Kikuchi, -3.5. So your Gausman addition is lost by bringing in three, by having injury-prone, inconsistent guys who have not made their, you know, when you look at Berríos, he didn't make his career in the AL East. He made it in the AL Central. Okay. You come to the AL East. What happens? You give up the most home runs. Your WHIP blows up to 145, $18 million a year for the next 7 years. God, I hope that works, but we just brought in the fences, you know? So every step that we make to, you know, hey, it's like, I'm completely lost. Like I said, it's a book and I'm jumping chapters here, but buying old, inconsistent players, Brandon Belt, Kevin Kiermaier. Are you kidding me? Brandon Belt hasn't, he's a 63% player. He's played 63% of the time over the last 4 years. Kevin Kiermaier plays 62% of the time over the last, since 2017. His OPS plus is 85. That's your replacement for when Springer's out of the lineup, is a guy who's 15%. I know they're going to be making some catches at him. But Teoscar dropping three or four balls a year is not the same. That production is not equal to the 100.
Okay, hold on.
And that he knocks in.
Teoscar may have only dropped three or four a year, but he also like hand delivered two dozen singles into doubles just by his
slow
trotting into the corner.
Absolutely. Heaven forbid a guy gets on from a loose base hit. I understand that. If you look at Reggie Jackson, he was a loafer out in the outfield, right? But what did he do? What could he do with the bat, right? It's what you lose. What did we brought in? What's our outfield? Our outfield right now is inconsistent Springer, inconsistent Kiermaier, Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
What's our slugging percentage from our outfielders? Is 400. Our slugging percentage from our four outfielders in 2021 was 470. No, you're not catching those balls to make up for that loss of slug. You can't. And now you've made it easier to play defense because you've made the outfield that much smaller. Man, Teo would have been better because he's got less balls to catch. He's got 20 feet less to go into the power alley. Like all of these decisions that they made when they moved in the field. Sorry, I'm just.
No. This is good. Are you a believer that we should have, because Teoscar Hernandez, and we can talk Lourdes Gurriel Jr. separately, but it's similar. Okay.
I can't see losing both is my issue.
Okay.
That's my issue.
For either of them, they're both in their quote unquote walk years, right? Free agents after the 2023 season.
Just like Aaron Judge.
30 years old.
Just like
after Aaron Judge. This season. Do you think the Blue Jays should have extended Teoscar Hernandez?
Absolutely.
Do you think that would have been the approach? So yeah, this or Lourdes.
Lourdes to me is Yuli. Lourdes is better than Yuli.
Okay, so which of those two would you have prioritized then? Teoscar or Lourdes?
Fine with either. I'm fine with either approach. Honestly,
let's just stick with Teoscar then.
Let's
just for argument's sake. Let's say Lourdes does get moved. Whatever, we bring in a lefty bat, it is what it is. But Teoscar is our guy.
Yes.
How much? Because we're looking at a 30-year-old outfielder who statistically is on the decline.
No.
Do you see a resurgence from Teoscar Hernandez? Because I think he's gonna have a good year in Seattle.
I don't think he's statistically on the decline. His OPS plus in the last 3 years is 135.
Okay. And went it's to 127 on, and it's, last year. It's literally on the decline. Okay. Because
no, but,
sure
but,
we
but,
could. No. Hold on. 2020, it was 146 for an OPS plus. 2021, it went down to 131. Yes. Last year, it went down again to 127. His OPS went from 919 to 870 to 807.
Yes.
That's on the decline.
Yes, but
by definition. And now he's only getting older.
Yeah, my argument is that his last year, where it was, 807?
807 last year, 2022.
So last year's slug across the league just fell off. As a hitter last year, it's an interesting situation to come into as a hitter. Vladdy lost 140 points of his slug, right? Bo lost 20. So it was a situation where hitters were reacting differently to that ball. Now, Teo went to an 8 .807 last year OPS, right? The 127 OPS yeah. plus still put him in fifth or sixth in league slugging. Still batted .270. That's a guy who plays 150 games. He hits 33, 35 home runs. He knocks in 110. He knocks in 100 runs. I don't think Teo's on the decline. I think Teo found his swing at 28. And he will be a Nelson Cruz masher until he's 40. But that's when.
That's optimistic. I mean, I
see everything that I saw in Jose Bautista.
I hear what you're saying about slugging being down across baseball.
Yeah,
I do get that. But the point of OPS plus, my understanding of it is weighted against
the league.
The league, yeah. Right? So an OPS plus of 127, yeah, he's still a 27 points better than the league average, right? Which is still good, but it's still
incredible
coming down, right? We talked about Bo Bichette. OPS plus went up last year.
Yes,
it did. Went from 121 to 127.
Yeah.
Vladdy had a substantial drop off, but obviously the year before he hit 167 for an OPS plus.
Yeah.
You can't expect to maintain those numbers.
No, but to me, Teo's numbers are right in the range of where he sits OPS wise. To me, if you're looking at normal baseballs, his OPS should sit anywhere from 850 to 920. That's where he's going to sit. I think he's going to sit there for a long time. That bat speed isn't going anywhere over the next 6 years. He is literally just, look at who he was 20 to 27. Didn't know who he was. Dante Bichette says, get rid of that leg kick. Level yourself out. He's a 270 hitter. Top 10 in league in slugging. Great wheels. A number four hitter.
And this is what I see out of Dalton Varsho. I feel like they are on a similar career path, but Dalton Varsho is just 4 years behind it. I see the last 4 years of Teoscar and go, that's where Dalton Varsho is about to go. We're going to get those.
Teo hits the ball 92.6 off the bat. Varsho hits the ball 87. Vladdy hits the ball 92.8 off the bat. So when they make contact, and especially when you make those moves to right center field, that's where Teo hits the ball. How many more balls are going out for Teo if you make those moves for him, as opposed to Dalton Varsho and his 104 OPS plus, right? Like I'm not this. My hatred isn't towards Varsho, by the way. It's the fact that I think Varsho.
I gotcha.
And Teo would be great. If you had Varsho and Teo, then you have a balanced lineup. You don't lose anything offensively. You gain defensively. Well, if you made one of those moves, I'm all for it. Lourdes is gone. Gabriel Moreno is gone. Varsho comes in. Teo stays. Teo, so you keep one of your corner outfielders on their walk year so they can go out there and set their value the way Aaron Judge just did with the Yankees winning an MVP. If they guy walk, they're not in the playoffs.
The great irony in this is that the Blue Jays are, by all accounts, in the market for a right-handed outfielder. So I'll give you that. I would feel better about this team minus Eric Swanson and keeping Teoscar.
100%. You just
and I'm not a Teoscar fan. I'm not a Teoscar fan, but
I'm a Teoscar fan on knowing that guy hits fourth in a lineup and is terrifying at the plate. You think the Yankees sat there and went, wait, they traded Eric Swanson for Teoscar Hernandez? You think every single member of the AL East wasn't just like, thank God, a reliever throws 50 innings against a guy who hits a three-run jack in the eighth and wins the game? Every game? The value there is just staggeringly different if you want to win now, if you're legitimate about winning now. And the fact that you can't sign these two guys. You can't sign either Lourdes or Teo. You're telling me that the management issues with the players are so bad that you can't take a guy from Houston who was nothing in Teo. Nothing. This guy's playing Dominican winter ball. This guy's a fourth outfielder. He's not worth anything. We turn him into a silver slugger, all-star, 30 home run, 100 RBI, 100 run guy who's in his prime and set his value, making him worth hundreds of millions of dollars then. And we can't sign him? We turned him into that. We can't sign that player. We can't sign Simeon. We can't sign our Cy Young winner. We can't sign the guy who hit 45 home runs. No, we you know what we can do? We can trade all our prospects for Berríos, for Chapman. You know, I love Chapman.
Hold on. I love Chapman. I'm not sold on Berríos. Haven't but been since we in, made the trade.
Bringing in Chapman is a loss compared to what Simeon did last year. If we had Simeon on the team, that's three more wins. That's a six war player and a 3.5 war player, right? That's so right there is another loss. Stripling, another loss, going big on spending huge money on the production, the hopeful production of Stripling on Bassett. I like Chris Bassett, but look at our starting rotation. It's Ryu out. Okay. We need Manoa to be a stud. The expectations are on him are to be an ace now. He has to be, he is, but he has to maintain that.
Let's look at the two kits, okay? Because again, we're getting long in the tooth here on topic number two. This is gonna be a 2-hour episode. This is great. Let's look at the kids, Bo and Vladdy. I know this is a point of frustration for you as well.
Yeah.
You would have loved to see
Anthopoulos signs. They would have been signed in the second.
You might be right.
Without a doubt.
You might be right. You might be right. These kids are not from the same background as the kids he's signing in Atlanta. I think that's a factor.
Anthopoulos went to Vladdy in 2015 and sat down with him and said all the right things to make him sign. All the right things. And then Mark Shapiro, how many postseason wins does Mark Shapiro have as a GM?
Okay, but we're also looking at a small sample size here, Joel.
No, as a GM in his entire career since
No. But this is the thing, is that we can look at Ross Atkins. We can look at Alex Anthopoulos and go, wow, he won a World Series with the Atlanta Braves. Genius, yep. Right?
Signed his core players.
Sure, but we can also we can have this same conversation 2 years from now after Acuña Jr. holds out and demands a trade or demands to renegotiate his contract, and on the heels of the Blue Jays winning back-to-back World Series and go, wow, look how great Ross Atkins and Shapiro are compared. It's a little bit unfair to be calculating this right now. I think we do need to look back at the end of the 10 years and go, okay, yeah, this one was a better approach. Winning a World Series is a lot of luck, right? You got to line up your cards. You got to get your things in order, but a lot of it does come down to injuries and health and guys having clutch performances that you can't bank on paper, right? Like, you know, we say all the time, this is why the games are played, right? Is because it's not just about the best team on paper wins at all. So if that's
Did Alex Anthopoulos in that World Series run go get a bunch of defensive outfielders, or did he go get a bunch of mashers and just mash his way to a world championship with Jorge Soler in the outfield, not catching anything? Did Kyle Schwarber just like lead the Phillies to
World Series? I understand the Phillies just went to the World Series and didn't have a single glove on their team.
Is the joke of Moneyball that Mark Shapiro doesn't know what he's doing in 2000 and is playing the defense game when defense doesn't matter really as a metric? Like, it's not really a comparable metric in 2000, but he's still like, is he still holding on to those concepts that Billy Beane schooled him on 20 years ago? And we made like one of the greatest baseball movies about.
Let's,
a joke.
Let's dissect that then. Let's dissect the baseball, the defense of baseball aspect, because there are rule changes coming to baseball that we don't know how they're going to play out.
That's true.
Right? A restriction on the shift, a limitation of how many infielders you have in the outfield, where you play your infield. I do think that this is going to have an impact on baseball and offense, and I think it's good. Until it's actually implemented, we won't be able to really measure the impact. What I do like about what Ross and Shapiro have done here is they have seen, at least in my opinion, they are at least looking forward as to where baseball is going and are making steps to build a team that will be hopefully successful in tomorrow's baseball, not based on yesterday's baseball. I didn't really care for last year and the year before, how much we were shifting when the writing was on the wall that like shifting is going away. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like the approach of like, well, let's just do this as much as we can while we can. It felt like this off season, finally we started
in the off season. We have to finally
the approach at least was, hey, look, this is what we think baseball is going to become. And let's try and build a team that will be successful in what we think baseball will be. Mm. Do you want to give any tip of the cap to them there at all? Or you can't?
Late to the party on getting lefties. I think they were so late to the party on getting lefty bats. And and now we brought in lefty bats that on in this delusional world have balanced our lineup just because they're lefties. These guys are hurt or they can't hit lefties. Right. Like you're not like Dalton Varsho coming into the lineup doesn't balance our lineup. The guy can't hit lefties. Teo and Lourdes hit as good against righties as Varsho does. And Teo has a 1050 OPS against lefties. Right. Like the one of the best hitters in baseball, period, against lefties. Gone. Carlos Rodon. Those games don't matter because Dalton Varsho is now in and he's got a 550 OPS against lefties. Not in the lineup, right? Like that is not balanced just because there's an L next to the way that he bats. That's not balancing a lineup. That's getting rid of a number four hitter for a number seven hitter occasionally.
Hey, you know what? You're talking to a guy who has been on the trumpet as long as this podcast has existed, that I would rather a good hitting righty than a lefty just for the sake of a lefty.
Yeah, like
I'm not saying that's what Dalton Varsho is at all. I'm higher on Varsho than you are. I hope things play out and I'm right. And I think you as a Jays fan also hope that I'm right.
I do. Once again, let's preface that to every single fan here. I told you at the end of the year that I will happily eat a crow bowl of hat, you know, a hat made of crow at the end of the season when we win the World Series. I'm looking forward to that meal. Okay. I want to be wrong, but this thing inside me is scared. And the being low on Varsho, once again, it's at the cost of Lourdes and if it's just one, I like the move. I like the move, losing one of those bats. But let's be honest. When it comes, your Teo, Lourdes, Simeon, these three guys who have left the team, all can legitimately hit in the top five spots. When it comes to if there's an injury that takes place, Lourdes can move up to two. Lourdes can hit four. Lourdes can hit one.
It's I'm not as ideal. High on Lourdes as you are.
Not ideal, but the guy's a 285 career hitter, right? He's a 797 career OPS plus, OPS guy. 117 OPS plus. He's a good hitter. He's a two. If 285 is the new 300, he's a 300 hitter, right? That ability to consistently hit is to me something that goes so far in the postseason. Hitters, not walkers, not guys who bat a .160 and get a walk and occasional home run. That doesn't play in the postseason. Everybody knows it. The reason I think Derek Jeter is one of the here I'm going to lose everybody. I think Derek Jeter is underrated. Because for 18 seasons, he played 155 games, averaged a .315 batting average, played all the time. Let's talk about Bo's 23 errors at shortstop. That's a great number. Give me 23 again. Give me 23 for the next decade. If you're leading the league in hits and you're batting .300 and you have 25 home run pop and you don't think that that guy is worth $7.5 million in arbitration, when you've only paid him $2.8 million since 2006. Who hired these guys our GMs, Adam? Why?
I love it. Let's end on that note about Bo Bichette. Because let's just get your thought. I know you're a big Bo Bichette believer. I am too. I am constantly blown away by the frustration across Reddit and Facebook and our comment section and Twitter and other podcasts, any frustration with Bo Bichette as a hitter and his quote unquote approach at the plate. I just don't understand like the defense. I understand the argument for his defense. I still think he's young. I still think name other than Francisco Lindor, one elite superstar shortstop on both sides of the ball before the age of 25. You can't do it.
Since Alex Rodriguez, they don't look for that.
So
since Alex Rodriguez, Miguel Tejada, Nomar Garciaparra, Derek Jeter, the entire concept of shortstop has gone from not Ozzie Smith. It's gone to Corey Seager. It's gone to mashing Fernando Tatis style shortstops.
So with that in mind, Bo Bichette, if you want to critique his defense, I don't agree with that as the most important measurement of a shortstop, but I'll listen to it. What I can't wrap my mind around is people frustrated with his approach at the plate. How can you be frustrated with someone's approach at the plate when they literally have led the league in hits two seasons in a row?
159 games played, back-to-back seasons, healthy. He can run. He's got incredible power for his size, right? Like he's, to me, if Bo Bichette puts together a average or above average defensive game, you're looking at MVP. You're looking at an MVP player.
This is what I'm talking about. I'm saying Bo Bichette is going to put some haters to quiet mode this season. The other thing is, I love
Bo's attitude. You always hear Bo's the first guy there. Bo's the last guy there. Now, I get it. Bo struggles with defense at shortstop. 23 errors in 159 games. Let's be honest. Simeon had 35 errors 1 year at shortstop. At 27, right? Like 3 years from now, imagine Bo putting up 35. That's like, it's a progression put for a 24-year-old guy playing the most difficult defensive spot on the infield.
I'm with you. And he plays it every gosh darn day.
Every day.
159 plus games at a shortstop is what you know you're getting out of him. Give me that.
99% on the field player at the position you should be 80% there for. Yeah. Correa, Story, Seager, Tatis, all of these guys injury prone, signing 300 massive deals. Bo, healthy, doing things at a younger age that none of them had done. Like Tatis, granted, has some home runs. Some of these guys have a blip at youth, but they're inconsistent when it comes to being healthy. Mm-hmm. And Bo magically is healthy, playing the style of baseball that he plays. Back the truck up. Put the C on it.
I'm with you. Hey, I'm not a big fan of C's on the front of jerseys. Jason,
you think Barrett, a Canadian team would be the team to embrace the C, though?
Hey, right? There you go. Yeah, a little C with a maple leaf on the inside cut out on the C. I see it now. Okay. Here's my, and I want to end the Shapiro Atkins talk on these two and their contract, their contract status. 3 years away. Three more years of team control before free agency. I like that all the moves we made this offseason, none of them hinder our ability to pay these guys after the 2026 season, right? Chris Bassett, 3-year deal. Dalton Varsho, there's no long-term contract there. Anybody that we brought in, any of the moves we've made, like you can call it addition by subtraction if you want. The fact that we didn't commit to Lourdes or Teo on George Springer type deals. What's that?
We go subtraction by subtraction.
Subtraction by subtraction. Sure. That's what you want to call it. But the fact that we didn't give Teoscar a 6-year, $150 million contract. That is the type of move that would have had an impact on our ability to give Bo, to give Vlad, to give Alec Manoah when that's eventually due. Without having the flexibility to make those types of contract offers. I still think we can do it. I think that this is a competitive team, or we have the ability to sign these guys long-term. We just looked at Aaron Judge, went to his walk year. The Yankees retained him. So I don't think the fact that we haven't locked these guys up yet does not predicate the fact that we won't be able to still at any point. I hope it doesn't come to the free agency year. I hope that, you know, with 1 year left in the deal, we get some, or 1 year left of ARB, we get something done long-term, because I don't want to sweat it out. I don't want to watch Bo hit 42 home runs, win a gold glove and hit 310 and go, you know, Yankees are going to be in on him.
See you to Colorado.
Yeah. But I do think there is maybe a nice thing of not having them locked up yet. If we were not a collective bargaining, or sorry, not collective, competitive balance team already, right? We're at the threshold. I think we're over as it stands today, right? If we were, and let's just call these the next 5 years of Bo and Vlad, the prime years of these kids, right? Okay. If we were going into their prime and we were still only paying a payroll of $150, $170, $180 million, I would be livid that we haven't got these guys locked up. We are not capitalizing on the discount that we're getting. But because we are a competitive balance threshold team, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the fact that, like, look, if we were to have locked up Bo and Vladdy right now, instead of getting them for $15 million and $5 million, right? $20 million total for the two of them.
Yep.
If we were paying each of them $30 million, $25 million, let's call it 25. So that's 50 million for the two of them instead of 20 million for the two of them. That's $30 million less that we have to spend on
broke, old, injury prone players that we shouldn't have spent money on in the first place. Yeah, no, I get
on a Brandon Belt, on a Chris Bassett, on these guys that are going to help this team.
Bassett, yes, Kikuchi, Barrios, Springer, Ryu, that's $100 million. That's $100 million of stupidly spent money when you could have spent it the smart 2023 way on youth, knowing that 20 to 30 is where you spend your money.
I still think we're going to get our money's worth out of George Springer this year. The Ryu money is frustrating, but it is what it is. It's in the past. It's the Ryu deals was 4 years ago now.
Yeah, but he went off the field needing four surgeries. Right? Like, isn't he? You're literally repiecing RoboCop together right now, hoping that he can take the field, isn't?
Okay. We can't have undone those contracts, whether or not we agree with the wasted money on Kikuchi and Ryu and George Springer. Let's just table those. Thing? Those are already done. Would you have rather this offseason we didn't take advantage of the discount we're getting on Bo and Vlad, have locked them up long term? And then also still not. So it's the exact same team, but we don't have Chris Bassett. We don't have Brandon Belt, where we're going into the season going, yeah, we've got Kikuchi and Mitch White. Those are our four and five.
So we keep Lourdes. We keep Teo. We don't sign Brandon Belt. We don't sign Kiermaier, and we sign Bo. Absolutely. 1,000% that. 100% that. Every bit of my heart screams, that's a better team. That's a way better team, and we're locked up. We get win now and win future, as opposed to whatever happens tomorrow happens. I don't know. Maybe the defensive approach will work. Like the shock is, you look at the Yankees and the way that they have stuck to what they are, who they are as a team, their mentality, who it is to be the Bronx Bombers, but they bolster and they say, Glaber, you're not a shortstop. Move you to second base. They make those little tweaks. They bring in Anthony Rizzo. They bring in the left-handed bats that bolster that team. They get the arms that they need. They sign their guy long-term. They do everything that you want. And you sit there and you go, am I going to become a Yankees fan? Because they're making the moves. They're making the goddamn right moves.
You've lost me. You've lost me. Am I going to become a Yankees fan?
No, like Seattle Mariners, another team. Another team that I look at and I go, well, there's Ray. There's Teo. They signed Julio long-term. They've got a young, good pitching staff that seems to be on their way up with cap space. You know, that's where we were in 2021. And they have the ability to add to the team, make that team better. And they have the long-term signing of their franchise player so that those kids can go buy that jersey for the next 10 years, right? We shouldn't be behind the Seattle Mariners when it comes to, that's the joke of baseball. And they may have passed us this year, Adam. They passed us last year.
No, they beat us last year. They beat us last year. We're better this year than we were last year. They have improved. We have improved more. We had a good offseason.
What if we lose a starter? What if
then we have Nate Pearson? Yeah, of course. I don't know. I mean, bad tacos can happen to anything. This is
from being below 500.
Yeah, but that applies to everyone. That applies to literally every team. So I can't even have that conversation with you. What if Gerrit Cole and Carlos Rodon and Nestor Cortes get in a car accident? Then yeah. The Yankees are in trouble.
Oh, no. Yankees are in horrible trouble by spending $1 billion on Gerrit Cole, cheater, Giancarlo Stanton, DH, Aaron Judge, 6'7", guy who's going to depreciate incredibly over the next few years. Right? So that approach isn't great, but they'll probably be pretty good for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yankees will find a way. I gotcha. We're going to have to skip over some of these topics here.
Sorry for going so long.
This Atkins plus Shapiro equals suck clip is now 37 minutes long. So I'm going to have to make this into a couple clips. Last thing on this Blue Jays roster construction, though, before we move on. And then we'll just talk the rest of this stuff next Wednesday because we're going to have you back for sure. So we'll skip over the rest of it. We'll get to the Tommy John movie on the way out. But last thing on the roster construction. I brought this up with Craig. This is kind of just a feeling I've had about the way this team has been constructed and the use of the DH. The DH has been you. And I just want to hear your opinion because maybe you love it. Maybe you hate it. Or maybe you disagree with how I view the Blue Jays specifically and the way we use the DH. Is that for the past at least couple seasons, we've used the DH as a day off role.
Yep.
Right? Should be called a DO, not a DH. It's a designated day off. I think that's a waste.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather have a Nelson Cruz, a JD Martinez, a Giancarlo Stanton, right? A David Ortiz type. I do foresee that is the Brandon Belt role.
Okay.
Now, again, I know he's coming off knee surgery. I know he's old and he's on the wrong side of 30, but the potential is there. So can we just operate for the next 2 minutes under the best case scenario? Everyone's healthy, right? And let's not speculate on bad tacos for anyone. If Brandon Belt is healthy and is able to be our Stanton, our JD Martinez, our David Ortiz, are you happier with a team that has a guy who is literally our designated hitter? Or do you like the old way of doing it for the Blue Jays where it's like, no, it's a day off for Springer. It's a day off for Kirk. It's a day off for Vladdy. Like those are still going to happen. I know that's still going to happen, but how do you feel about the way this DH is being used?
Also the fact that it's a catcher spot. Like it's a, for a lot of the, if Danny's playing, you're DHing Kirk if everybody's healthy, right? And it's and Kirk in the four spot is also very interesting to me when 780 doesn't play so great over the course of a season. Like the first half was lovely, but 780 OPS in your four spot, I don't know. But like Brandon Belt,
I'm not a Kirk guy. I'm not a Kirk guy.
That's like my Kirk issue is
especially long term. The longer I look at Kirk, like into the future, the less of a Kirk guy I am. So
I'm a fan of Kirk, but as a bargaining chip, to me, I felt there was a smarter move moving Kirk, keeping Moreno's athleticism, keeping Moreno's utility ability to play other positions potentially. If you could have packaged Lourdes and Kirk for Varsho, I feel like that was a lot smarter move. And the physicality of depending
smarter on move, sure. But if the Diamondbacks didn't want it, that they would rather have Moreno than Kirk too. I just mean
if you're starting there as your moving point, right? Like Kirk was very sought out. Kirk is still very sought out. Like there's teams out there that very much want Alejandro Kirk, a potential 300 hitting catcher, right? But to know that that's a 275 pound guy behind the plate, what's his knees going to be like? The guy, we love to watch him run, but he's not moving very fast. And the fact that if Moreno could come in and you see Moreno as that athletic version of what Kirk can do. The same way they're both contact hitters with a little bit of power potential if they elevate their launch angle. It's all there, but Moreno's the freak athlete. So to see that loss, that hurts with the DH position. And like any one of our moves that we brought in, Kiermaier, Varsho, Belt, I don't get mad at them individually. I get mad at all of it together. I get mad at all of these moves together. So if we're looking at the team at the end of 22, when you bring in Brandon Belt as a DH for that team, that is a great move to have that lefty slugger with at least Teo, or at least Lourdes still in the lineup, right? To me, having Teoscar Hernandez as your DH, I'm all for that, right? I don't care. That guy mashes and you just take him out of the field, put Kiermaier in defensively and keep his bat. That would have been a possible move. That's what they're conceiving of doing in Seattle. So to me, I don't like the idea of it being a rest spot. I think you painted yourself into a position with Springer being hurt so much and going even more this year into injury prone players, right? We were placing our 63% of on the field center fielder Springer with a 63% Kiermaier and a 60% Belt and a, you know, 58% Ryu. And it's just like, all of that is what that you're now filling your DH spot because your injuries are now your DH spot. Right. And your bullpen, like all the acquisitions that we've had to make for bullpen, it's just like Gausman, Berríos, Ryu, Kikuchi for $80 million last year came in 270 innings shy of what we expected. Okay. 270 innings shy on $80 million. You spend $80 million, you get 270 innings less than you expected. That's why your bullpen sucks. So let's bolster our bullpen and lose our offense that made us a team, that was the core of this team. Let's give up what we were, what the fans cheer for, the core base, the way this franchise sells itself.
Well, let's give up the team that, like you just said, wasn't getting it done. And let's pivot.
But you had, they didn't get it done in 21. Okay. But that's a first place team with $100 million of payroll to add to it. That's that forward, you move that forward, you had 50 million of that, you should win 100 games the following year. Not 90, 92 off of 100 projected is 9 wins less. Last year was 9 wins less than what we should have had. Absolutely 9 wins less, spending 60 million more. Yeah. Okay. If we are a 92 win team this year and Shapiro and Atkins are still the GMs, what the fuck, Adam? Okay, you didn't make the team better. You literally spent $60 million to make the team 10 wins worse. That's embarrassing. That's fucking embarrassing, man. I could spend fucking half of my day and do a way better job than that. I know it's ridiculous to say better than GMs or the Blue Jays. Trust me, man, I so could. Those are stupid moves.
All right, Joel. All right. I love you. Let's end the rant there. We're going to skip over the next three topics. We are already gone long. No, this is great because those topics were just filler topics. Let's be honest. So Angels ownership, Artie Moreno, not going to sell the Angels. Xander Bogaerts. It's interesting, but it's also a little bit old news. We'll get to that next week sometime if we need to. MLB needs this tech. We're going to put a pin in this because this, I think, is a great idea. But I don't want to gloss over it. I really want to deep dive this tech. So we'll do this next Wednesday. But let's end with the Tommy John movie because this is really cool. So this is a screenplay, a script that have written.
Yeah.
It is written. 2000. Going through drafts still? How close is this to
120 drafts all done? The script is as good as I can make it.
Okay, so this is the biopic. This is the story of Tommy John, of Tommy John surgery, right?
Yes. If you're familiar with like a movie like 42 or 61, those are movies that tried to grab an incident and do it in 1 year. The one-year tale of color barrier being broken or the home run chase in 1961. What I tried to do is a 10-year piece of Tommy John's life from 1968 to 1977. He had the surgery in 74. So it's kind of this build up to the injury. You see the cortisone that he takes, you know, the strain that he's putting himself through, the fact that he knows his arm is going to explode at some point, and he's just pitching to that eventual outcome. And then the miraculous doctor who worked for the Dodgers named Dr. Frank Job, who was a polio orthopedic surgeon, who came up with this incredible concept of taking the palmaris longus, which is a tendon out of your opposing forearm, going in to the elbow, taking out your ulnar collateral ligament, and then literally sewing together your elbow at the joint with your tendon. And miraculously, they tried this 1974, kind of, you know, the $6 million man, RoboCop, this guy, bring him back from with some science fiction that had never been tried before. And miraculously, it worked. He went on to pitch 13 more seasons to the age of 47, pitching with the Yankees. The Yankees literally signed him at 36 years old to the second multi-million dollar contract a pitcher's ever made. So it's like not just the fact that this surgery came revolutionized the game. Mm-hmm. Like literally, I know this is wild to say, but I look at it in the same light as like a Roberto Clemente, a Jackie Robinson moment of when this moment happened, it changed the game forever. The game would never be the same.
It is a surgery, like you said, has saved so many careers.
Yes.
What year did he get his surgery? You would know.
74.
1974. I don't have the numbers in front of me. If I was more prepared, I would. But an interesting stat I'd be curious about is since 1974, so 1975 and beyond, how many Hall of Fame pitchers have been inducted that have not had Tommy John surgery?
That have not?
Yeah.
So there's still a few, like Maddox, Glavin, Johnson.
Right, but I bet you it is like almost now, single digits, maybe.
Now we're getting to the point where it's 50% of the league. Right. Now your Hall of Famers
have, like, you can't have a 20-year career at this point without having at least one Tommy John, right?
Like, look at the difference. Like Strasburg had it to start. DeGrom had it as a shortstop. Corey Seager has had it as a shortstop. Salvador Perez has had it. Otani has had it. Like Verlander.
What story just kind of had it.
Then we just saw from Justin Verlander, .180 ERA at 39, 1 year removed from Tommy John, right? It is a miracle. It's the greatest sports surgery there is.
So this is a, what do they call? And, you know, sometimes you read a book and it's like the unauthorized biography of, mm-hmm, Elon Musk.
Yes.
Right. And this is the story of their life and, or whatever segment of their life, but it is not done in coordination, not done in cooperation with the subject themselves.
Like social network.
Right. That's a great example there. Mark Zuckerberg. That's not what this is, right? You have been in touch with, you've met Tommy John. This isn't he is,
I know,
given the blessing to this script.
Yes. I talk to Tommy John every once in a while. We're friends. I did some revisions of the script.
And yet you won't pull any strings to get him on the, on the walk-off. I can't even believe
this. I think that's probably doable. I could probably talk him to coming, coming on.
I'm putting you on the spot here, Joel, but I mean, like, I would love to talk to him for sure.
In the last 3 years, he's dealt with some like incredible health issues. He had this horrible reaction to COVID where literally his sense of touch was taken away from him for like 6 months. So he had to go through rehab to literally regain feeling in his body. So I don't even know if I should be saying that, but it's okay.
Put that out. Yeah.
No, it's all right. I think that's right. But we're friends. He's given me a 4-year release on the story rights so that we can make it into a film. And it's currently with, I don't know if the
hold
fans
on.
Are. Yeah.
By all, everything you've said so far, this sounds like a very legitimate baseball movie. Mm-hmm. There's no more legitimate, though, than if you could somehow, here's an idea for you, get this into the hands of Kevin Costner, who is like the baseball movie guy. Is that possible?
It's in his hands, right?
No way. It is not.
It is in Kevin Costner's hands and Billy Crystal's hands as we speak. And I had a
disbelief right now, Joel.
I had a draft. I had to do a draft for American Zoetrope, which is Francis Ford Coppola and Fred Roos. You might not know those names, but that's Godfather for the fans out there. These are the producers of The Godfather. Coppola is the writer of The Godfather. That was the company that first got a hold of this material and championed it. So they're the ones that are taking it and bringing production companies together to split the bill and to make a $65-70 million A-list baseball film.
This is cool, man. Oh, I have goosebumps just thinking about this.
Costner would be the perfect Dr. Job. So that's where my fingers crossed. He actually is an Alberta resident at times. He comes to Alberta. I believe he's got a ranch close to Calgary. He did the
Yellowstone. I've heard of it. No, I'm kidding.
Well, no, like he in real life he does. And he went to the Calgary Stampede. He was the parade or something. Right.
And you're an Alberta resident for anybody who doesn't know. I'm in Alberta. Scott's in Alberta. For anybody that doesn't know, you are a big Hollywood writer, also out of Alberta.
A little. Yeah, I've got my toe dipped into Hollywood, that's for sure.
Well, you just had a nice little award at a film festival. Let's talk about that for a second on our way out here.
We won Best International Short at Cannes, at the Cannes International. So Cannes does a...
I've heard of that.
Yeah, they do a subsidiary short festival through their main feature festival, and we won Best International Short for a screenplay that I'd written about a writer who doesn't like writing the Hollywood classic Hollywood system anymore. And that, weirdly enough, it won an award at the Canadian Short Film Festival. It's won about 15. You can look it on IMDb. It's won about 15 awards so far. Literally led to my career kind of exploding over the last year.
That's very and a half. Cool. Very cool. All right. Last thing I want to just pick your brain on the way out the door here. ChatGPT, screenwriting. Your job is obsolete.
I plugged in one of my scenes to ChatGPT.
Oh, God. Yeah.
To write Tommy John and Dr. Job sitting down and discussing his injury and it being a career-ending injury. And they sit down and he's like, I got something terrible to tell you, Tommy. You're probably never going to be able to pitch again. You got this injury. You blew out your arm. But great news. There's a surgery. It's called Tommy John surgery. And we might be able to, so I'm sitting there and I'm reading this and I'm like, you almost got me there, ChatGPT.
Oh my God. That was almost hilarious. The scene
until it figured out that they had invented the solution before the solution was invented. And
oh my God. That's amazing.
Maybe in a year or so, my job will be.
That's a whole interesting time travel paradox movie. That's what that is.
Exactly.
I'm into it. It's sci-fi at that point. Very cool. All right. Well, we're pushing 90 minutes now, Joel, so I can't take up any more of your time. Appreciate you coming out here. Appreciate the long discussion on Shapiro and Atkins, on sticky stuff, on everything. Hope I'm wrong, everybody. Hope you're wrong, too. We'll have you back next week, of course, talk about all the things we didn't get time to today. Appreciate everybody who watched the longer than usual clips today. Everybody who listened and downloaded on iTunes, Spotify, whatever the case may be. Anything else to add, Joel, before we wrap it up?
I'm good, man. That was fun. It was fun. Right. Sorry for the rambling and the wild emotions. You know, I get carried away with this team. Sometimes.
Not at all.
Playing the devil's advocate.
Love it. All right, Joel, we'll catch you on the next one, and go Jays, go.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Oscar with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.